Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Sam Thompson, or Beau, has been a practicing pagan since the 1990s. He is the past vice president and president of Triad Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans and is a Reiki master teacher and certified great life coach. Sam learned primitive blacksmithing around 2012 and took to it like a duck to water. He teaches both primitive blacksmithing as well as magical blacksmithing in the foothills of North Carolina. The focal point of his work is on the magical part of blacksmithing, and he is currently a full-time magical smith. Being a priest of the Morrigan heavily influences what he does, and his smithy is dedicated to her. He is a proud Army veteran and the author of Metal Never Lies. Sam Thompson, welcome to Witchlit.
Woohoo! Yeah. Well, great to be here. Thanks for inviting me. This was awesome.
Oh, thanks for coming on. So I think we're going to talk a lot about metalsmithing, but before we get to that, our first question for everybody is, why write in this era of social media and, you know, thousands podcasts? Why still write books?
I don't have a clue. I was just doing what I was. I know, right? It was not something that I wanted to do. It was something that I was given a polite suggestion. For those who can't see, I did air quotes. Polite suggestion is where my deity, the Morrigan, has requested something of me. And I deem it more as a, to me, it feels better if it's politely suggested versus dictated. Mm-hmm. So I just say polite suggestion. Started getting into metal magic. And I was doing this work for other people, and I was finding these little nuggets that were laying around as I was doing the work. I went in search of people that knew more than I did. You know, hopefully there's something out there on metal magic, right? Magic of metal. And there's literally bupkis out there that I could find. You know, maybe my Google foo is not as good as everybody else's, but I couldn't find anything. And so that little ping in the back of my head was like, well, I guess you need to write the book. So needless to say, that's how it got written. It wasn't something I've never wanted to write. I don't even speak English, let alone know how to write in it. I mean, because it is a completely different language, writing something versus speaking it. I found out. So that is why I wrote the book, because I was basically told to.
Yeah. I think you might be the first reluctant writer we've had on the show.
Yeah, I don't.
Which I love. I love that.
I'm never. I didn't want to write this one. Mm-hmm. So
you got this polite suggestion from Morgan to write this book. So did you jump in immediately, or did you push back a little bit?
As with all things with our relationship, our meaning my relationship with her, is usually my first response is no. I know I'm doing it anyway, you know, because she's like, you need to write a book. I'm like, no, I don't. I'm not the guy, right? I don't know anything about that. So that went on for, you know, weeks until I got tired of not sleeping, and then decided it was probably best for me to just do what I'm told. And then looking at it, it needed to be done, right? I mean, I think it's important. As I was learning about the magic of metal, I was thinking, well, more people need to know about this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is important. You know, it's something that we have forgotten. I don't think anything's lost. I just think we just misremember or don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, so we needed to reconnect. You know, we hadn't lost anything. We just needed to kind of reconnect to it. And as I was studying the lore that surrounded the Morrigan itself, herself, you know, I started seeing these little bits of the mythology pop up. And going, oh, wow, And that story I thought needed to be told, and I think it needed to be told in a way to where it was accessible to everyone, not just those that were behind an anvil.
Yeah.
Because I think we're all connected to it, you know. So I don't know if it answers the question. I'll get really bad about going down a tangent, and I'll take us on a rabbit hole of epic proportions.
No, that's good. I mean, it's one of the beanies of podcasts, is they're kind of made for rabbit holes. So I think it's in the final conclusion or your author note at the end that, you know, you started the book and you had this idea that it was about how to forge. And it's going to be instructional. And you get through that part of the book and you're like, this is completely wrong. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you learned pretty early on that 90% of writing is editing.
As I was getting into it, I was like, this isn't working. You know, this isn't really what it needs. You know, she was like, this isn't what it needs to be. You know, people know how to forge, right? We've been forging since the Copper Age. We don't need somebody else teaching us how to forge, right? There's plenty of videos, books, ad nauseum that's out there. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing on there about how to connect to the magic of metal. And I had someone that's actually a friend of mine came to one of my classes, and they were like, you know, this would be great if I could do something like this in an urban environment, because I live in an apartment. I'm like, that's what the book needs to be about. You know, because I was in the early stages of it at that point, you know, and I'm going to be, you know, Joe Blacksmith here and teach everybody, you know, how to, you know, nobody wants to do that. You know, I mean, you can blacksmithing's hard. You know,
yeah.
If it was easy, everybody be doing it, mm-hmm. you know? So I think, you know, being able to pivot from it and go, you know, what's the object of the exercise? You know, what's the end result? What, you know, starting with the end in mind, you know, what do I want to have? What do I want to say at the very end of it? You know, as I want it to be something that if people choose to do so, they can add it into their practice and be a part of their daily lives, because I personally think that metal magic will change your life. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can look at metal after reading the book and doing some of the exercises. I personally don't think that you can look at it the same ever again. And I think that's a wonderful thing, you know, mm-hmm. because I think it now gives you access to a whole new realm of possibility that you never had before.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, with listeners and I, we always talk a little bit before, and I think, you know, one of the things that comes across in the book is you don't have to want to be a blacksmith to get something out of this book. Like, it also really talks about the magic of metal. And one of the parts I really enjoyed was you sharing your own relationship with different kinds of metals. And I kind of wondered if you could like go into, like, I don't know that everyone who, you know, even knows about blacksmithing understands that some metals can be forged and some metals cannot, and like how that changes your personal relationship to them. Do you want to expand on that just a little bit?
Perfect. Right, well, in the book, I talk about four metals, because that's mainly, excuse me, the only ones that I work with at Her Smithy. I work with steel/iron. I will use those words interchangeably, because steel is basically 98% iron and 2% some other stuff. So it's technically not right, but just for the sake of simplicity, I think it's easier. I just kind of flip-flop them. Mm-hmm. And then I work with copper, and I work with brass, and I work with bronze. Copper can actually be forged somewhat, which means you can heat it up and you can move it. Bronze and brass, as far as my limited capabilities, because, you know, I've only been doing this a decade. I'm not a master smith. I'm not a guru on the subject of smithing at all. But I have a challenge to be able to actually forge them. I can use them within my work, and I use them as, lack of a better word, adornments, right? To add-ons. I'll use them as a single piece. I'll do some movement with them. But as far as taking them from round and making them square, flat, whatever, actually forging them, I don't, because they are considered cast metals, which means you melt them because they're alloys, right?
Right.
So you've got, and they're two metals that are melted together. So they're alloys, and then you pour them in a form, which is a cast. Right. That's where you get cast iron, right? Your cast iron pans are poured into a form. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, I do have a little bit different relationship with each one, just because the work is different with each one. But to take it one step further, it's also because each metal is different. You know, so you're going to have a different relationship with each one just because they're not the same. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
No, it makes sense to me. I mean, it's like someone who works with plants or crystals or rocks, or my cat's making his presence known. I apologize. you know, I think that makes sense to me, that you know, if you are an animist, then you accept that these things would be different, right?
Very much so. And I think they very much have very, to me, have very distinct personalities. To me, you know, starting with the Copper Age, I always kind of get the feeling the copper is having this gentle wisdom to it. You know, it's gentle. There's a healing element of it. Depending on what, you know, where you are in the world, you know, it's how it's used. But for the most part, I think it's very, you know, naturally healing. I like it. I always kind of looked at it as being kind of, I don't know, lack of a better word, blood of the earth, because you can get it to a particular temperature and it actually looks, it'll take on, to me, takes on the color of blood, depending on how you heat it. You know, and then we get into, you know, the Bronze Age, which is a mixture of copper and tin, right? You know, and it gets really shiny. You've heard bright as bronze. Mm-hmm. You know, those that know any of the Celtic mythology, I always kind of equate bronze with the god Lu. You know, it's just very, you know, here I am to save the day kind of thing, very bright. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you can't miss it, right? I mean, bronze is just there. But bronze also has that very, you know, it is very kind of sturdy. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll withhold force, right? So it takes a licking, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then you get into brass, which I think, you know, people overlook brass. I think brass gets a, you know, bad rap. You know, I love brass. As we were talking earlier, I look at brass as kind of like my favorite uncle. Brass is just very utilitarian. Mm-hmm. Right. You see a lot of it in marine uses, right? Boats, vessels, bells, rudders, propellers, all this kind of stuff, you know, in my home, we use them a lot for like candle dishes and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, brass to me is just very utilitarian. You know, it has that, you know, just pickup truck. You know, it has a lot of uses, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very morphing, you know, because I think a lot of times you can't even see brass until you look for it. Sometimes it just kind of seems to fade into its surroundings. Yeah. Then, of course, you've got iron, and iron's just, you know, it's, to me, iron is laser-like focused. You know, it has one job. You know, it's very strong, it's courageous, it's dependable, you know, but it's, you know, it's not a, it can do a lot of different things, but it individually can only do one thing,
right,
is how I look at it. That was a really long answer to a really short question. But to tag on to that I think that really kind of got me started with all the metal magic is all these four that I mentioned, every human has a very intimate connection to each one of them, mm-hmm. because they are made up of us. They're in us. You know, we have iron, we have copper, we have zinc, mm-hmm. we have tin. So we have all these metals currently residing inside of us. So we're already naturally connected to them. We have that intimate connection already to these metals. So it's not something we have to go out and create. We just have to connect.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that. And it's interesting. I mean, I've talked about this on the show, and you and I talked before that. I was a chef and culinary instructor for a long time. And, you know, like I still cook a lot at home, and it made me think about, like, especially when you talk about there's so many different kinds of steel, right? Like my pots and pans and my knives, and like how they're different based on, like, my French steel pan is very different than a cast iron pan, which is very different than a stainless steel pan. And they have certain purposes and certain personalities when you're using them, and like the difference between a carbon steel knife and a stainless steel knife, and how you have to care for them and what you use them with. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we do kind of, it's almost, I don't know. There's a great podcast about plant blindness, like how we just forget that plants are out there. And I think we're that way with metal. I think you're right. Yeah. We've lost how culturally changing, societally changing metal is, and like how we're completely surrounded by it all the time. I mean, I'm talking to you on a computer made out of aluminum, you know.
You know, and I think that was part of the exercises that I have in the book, is trying to help people become more aware of that, mm-hmm. you know, and see how much that it does. Because like you said, you don't see it. You know, it's like, you know, if you take a room in your house just like it is, and you just rearrange it. You don't add anything to it, you don't take anything from it, but you just rearrange everything in it. Now you've got a bunch of brand new stuff because you're looking at it in a different way.
Right. Yeah. So I'm curious, there's a lot of metals you don't talk about in the book, like, because they're not ones you work with, but I do think about like how much we are surrounded with things like aluminum and nickel, and because there's just so much of like modern stuff is made out of those. Mm-hmm. Like, do you also have relationships with those, or do you really just kind of confine your magical work to the four you work with?
I pretty much confine myself to what I work with. Mm-hmm. And that's more because I'm real simple minded, and it's just easier for me to, you know, narrow it down, mm-hmm. you know, stay within my lane, so to speak. And this is what I work with, and it's what I have a relationship with presently. Doesn't mean that I'm not going to branch out, because I do have aluminum and some of these other metals that I do have on site at the smithy, but I just haven't had enough time to work with them to form that relationship that I feel comfortable speaking about.
Yeah. Right? No, that makes sense.
I don't want to be one of those people that talks about things they don't really have a lot of knowledge on. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, so I just,
I respect that a lot, actually.
For this app, yeah, I ain't the guy. You know, talk to me about these four and I can work with you. But other than that, yeah, I ain't the guy.
Yeah. So one of the other things that you do is you actually bring people out to the smith.
Yeah.
To learn foraging. I started to say foraging because I think now I have plants on my brain. It's funny how close those words are. But so what is that like actually having people out there, like either for the first time or people who may come in knowing something, like what is that like as both a teacher and a magical practitioner to bring people into that space?
Well, I think one of the cool things about it is I've had people that have come out that have blacksmithing experience, and it's still going to be something completely different. Mm-hmm. I do what I call primitive smithing. And when I teach blacksmithing, I teach two different types of courses, one on primitive blacksmithing. And what that is basically we learn it old school, right? We were literally make bellows, dig a hole in the ground, and forge. Because my thought is, I want to be able to give someone a practice that they can take with them. You know, I don't want it to be something that somebody comes and has an experience, which is all well and good and really cool. But if you want to expand on the experience, if you don't have anything that you can do it with, you know, you're lost, right? So as long as you have a shovel and some dirt that you can dig, you can forge. You know, we've been forging as a species since the Copper Age, you know, and it ain't changed none, really. Yeah. You know, you get it hot and you hit it hard. That's pretty much the principle of it, you know, and we use wood because we basically create our own charcoal as we go. My personal forge is a charcoal forge to where I actually make charcoal here on site, here on the land. And I make my own charcoal that I use in my forge because I think, for me, it's important if I'm making magical tools to be involved in the whole process. You know, I don't want to go buy coal. And this is a personal thing. This is not a judgment on anybody. It's just from my work. I want to make sure that it's as the integrity of it is really important to me. And I want to make sure that I know where the wood comes from. You know, it's not fallen. It's, you know, it's leftover. Right. So it's scrap. So the wood that I use has already fallen. It's already down. Or it's scrap wood that I used to make charcoal with. I used to, you know, use to even create the fire to make the charcoal is all scrap wood or already fallen trees. You know, to that part, to the metal that I use is pretty much, it's upcycled. You know, I don't, 98% probably the metal that I use in my smithy is somebody's junk, right? I've literally gone to the scrapyard and somebody's gifted me that didn't need it anymore. You know, it's not new, right? So it has a life or has had a life. And I think that to me is very important because when I'm putting that type of work and time and energy and effort into, for instance, your magical tool, you know, I want to have as much control of the surroundings as possible to give you the tool that you deserve. Because I look at when someone gets a tool that I've made for them at commission, because most of my work is commission work, that it is a legacy item. It's not just a widget. You know, it came off a production line. It has a life of its own. I am an animist, so it does have a life of its own. Right. And it's something that'll be a legacy item for you and generations to come, is my thought.
Yeah.
And then the magical, to get back to your question, I'm sorry, I got all around.
No.
And then the magical part, because these are weekends, right? People come in on a Friday and they leave Sunday. And I've had people come from literally all over the country, Washington State, Illinois, Maryland, and I'm in North Carolina, right? People come from all over the country to take this. The magical class is a little different because we focus more on the forge work. So I've got cut up 55-gallon barrels that I use for our forges. We still use the wood, but we spend more time with learning how to connect with the metal and listen to the metal and being open to the work that the metal wants done so that we can create something over that weekend for them to take back and add into their practice and for them to continue that metal magic practice. You don't have to, as we said earlier, you don't have to forge and be a blacksmith to work metal magic, but you need to kind of understand how to work with metal, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, it does make sense. And I find the whole, like, the upcycling part, I thought was really fascinating, and how you do really listen and talk to the metal and like find out its story and like where it wants to go. And like, I mean, obviously animist practice, but also like, I love the idea of telling a story in a different way. Like I mean, just as a writer myself, like any way you can share a story to me seems positive. And we, you know, like you said, forging is way before literacy. In a lot of ways. So I think, I don't know, I'm just fascinated by that. So like, I guess what for you, have there been experiences with these pieces you worked on that like, that just surprised you, or like, kind of like, what's that like talking to metal?
I think one of the first times that I got, and it started clicking, right? Because I'm kind of daft at times. It takes a little while for me to kind of, you know, the light bulb to go on.
I think you sell yourself short, Sam.
Well, it's an orange, right? So it's not a tangerine, it's an orange. So one of the things I was working on a here where we live, we have a lot of country, right? So we create a lot of hay, so we have horses and cows and that kind of stuff, feed cattle. And there's these what they call hay rake tines, which are these semicircular things that go behind a tractor that pull the rake up the hay after it's been cut to get it in line for baling. Okay. Trying to talk a little bit about this. And then, so while I was out doing some scavenging, just sounds really bad, but while I was out shopping for metal, I came across one of these. These are great tool steel, right? Because it's a tool and it's got pretty high carbon content and it's kind of springy, it's flexible, it's great metal. And I got this and I looked at this thing and I said, wow, what a really cool thing. I ended up using one to make an athami out of for someone. And I said, wow, what a cool, neat thing. Cause this piece of metal helped feed somebody's family one time. Mm-hmm. Right. So it helped feed cattle that helped put food on somebody's table. Right. So if you look at, you know, extrapolate the whole story, and I'm kind of telling myself a story, and I'm, you know, start going, well, maybe I'm not really telling it. Maybe I'm hearing it. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is kind of in my early stages. And okay, that's interesting. And then I had a friend 3 or 4 years ago that said, I need you to make me a wand. And I'm like, okay. So we kind of go through a process. It was about a 3 or 4 month process to where I went out, shopped for a stone. They're in a different country. So we were shopping together via the internet, the magic of aluminum, as you say.
Right.
And we're shopping for this and we go to make it. And she's like, you know, I kind of want it like this. And these are kind of how I want it to be. And I'm like, okay, well, just so you know, once I get forging, it's kind of all bets are off. Right. So it'll be kind of how it needs to be. And I started working on it. And it was very clear to me that the way I was working wasn't the way it wanted to be worked. Okay. It wasn't that it was wrong. It just wasn't right. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like, no, not like that, like this. was what I was getting. And I ended up working on it and working on it and working on it and forging it out over a couple of days and showing them, here's your wands. They're like, that's perfect. That's exactly what I had in my mind, which was completely different than what I had in my mind. You know, but being open to listening, being the animus, being open to listen to what it wanted and what it needed, and it already having that connection with the end user, right? And just being a part of being able to co-create, right? Because that's kind of how I look at it. I consider myself a lot of times an active spectator, you know, I just kind of show up and pay attention and let go of the outcome, you know, because I've learned that it knows more about what needs to be done than I do. You know, I ain't that smart, you know, but it kind of already knows what needs to happen. And that was the first time that I went, all right, there's something here. I'm not sure what it is, you know, but there's something here. And that's when I started doing research and looking. And that was the kind of, that was the first crumb.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Do you think that you brought that, you know, kind of, I guess, you know, almost mindfulness really to the work of writing the book too?
I was asleep most of the time I wrote the book. Because, all right. So this is how a lot of it got wrote. I was putting it off. I'm going to be perfectly honest. Cause it was very intimidating to me. Barely have a high school education. Went to college long enough to know that I didn't, that wasn't my thing. Right. Flunked out, be honest. Right. Cause I went to school in a really small town. There wasn't a whole lot. Education wasn't a high priority at school. Right. So I was really intimidated by doing it. So as I do sometimes, I just kind of put things off and hopefully, you know, you sweep it under a rug long enough, it'll go away, which is not at all what happens, but you know,
it grows horns and scales.
Yeah. I know that, but it still doesn't make it, you know, different, you know, and I kept coming up with the excuse of, I just didn't have time, right? I'm working, you know, we have quite a bit of acreage here. We've got, you know, we're working on being self-sufficient and my wife's an herbalist and there's a lot of herbs are growing. There's a lot of work to be done here, right? On our land. And so I just didn't have time. And I'm doing air quotes again for those that don't see. And so along about 3 o'clock one morning, early one morning, I was awakened with, you need to write a book. I'm like, you know, I'm sleeping. She said, well, no, you need to be writing. You didn't write today, so you need to write now. You're not doing anything now. How about now? Mm-hmm. So for about the next 8 months, I was up at 3 o'clock, 3 or 4 times a week, writing the book. So I was literally just, it was strange. I mean, I don't know what to compare it to because I've never done anything like that, mm-hmm. You know?
But I mean, so you went big though. Not only did you just, you know, go, yes, I will write the book, but you self-published. So what was that like to just kind of walk into? I mean, this is your first book that you don't really want to write, but you're doing. And you're like, oh, I'm going to self-publish it and learn that whole experience. So.
You know, I'm going to say the thing about it was, for the most part for me, it was easy. There were some tense parts, but there I'm blessed enough to where I have enough people that I'm in community with that are good at certain things that I'm not. And I leaned on them because they knew what I was doing. And I think they knew me well enough to know that what I was doing was important too. So I leaned on a lot of them and I had people that had backgrounds of editing that helped me with editing and backgrounds of, you know, this is how it needs to look and this is a structure. And I would send it and we'd go, oh, this is no, you need to know. Survey says, you know, do you want it red? Did you do? This is not how you need to do it. Yeah. So I had enough people within my community that I'm associated with that really did some heavy lifting for me. That I would not have been able to do it otherwise. Because like you said, I don't know about this. So it worked out rather smoothly. Not to say it was easy because it wasn't easy. But it seemed not to have a whole lot of hiccups. But then again, I don't have a lot of experience as far as comparison to what that's supposed to look like. You know, I kept getting a couple of sayings as I went through this process that kind of kept coming to mind. You know, one was, you know, if you leaning back, I grew up Southern Baptist, right? And one of the things about that mythology that they talk about is the gifts of the Spirit, you know, and everybody can't be the hand or the foot or the mouth or the whatever, right? There's different gifts and everybody's got to make up the whole body, right? So I leaned into that and what I kept getting was, you know, you just need to be the foot, you know, you just do foot stuff and let me, being the Morgan, take care of all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. You just do what it is you need to do and I will take care of the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And there were some times where I would be concerned about it because, I mean, like you said, it's a kind of a big thing. You know, it's nothing like going out full bore, so to speak, and go, here I am, you know, and all my ignorance, you know, and, you know, better be thought a fool, right? You know, so I was having a lot of this. And so it was that. And the other thing that kept coming back to me was that's not your cow. You know, let me take care of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you just do what it is you need to do.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I don't want to say divinely inspired because sometimes I think that gets, you know, overly used and wore out. But I mean, I definitely think that if it had not been for the need for it, it would have never come to pass. Well, I would have never written it if she hadn't told me, to be honest with you. We would not be having this conversation.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Did you think of like shopping it around to a publisher, or was it just like, no, we're going to go self-publish from the jump?
No, it needed to get out. I didn't have time. And I have enough friends that are published that work with publishers, and I heard all the nightmares and I'm like, you know, I don't have that. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time to do all that. And, you know, I'm being told to get it out. I'm getting it out. And once I get it out, you know, I'm going to do my part to make it work, which is, you know, being invited by wonderful people like you to talk about the work. But other than that, you know, I'm just doing what I'm told. I know it sounds kind of silly, but, you know, it is.
What happens if she tells you you have to write another book?
No, that'll be the first thing I say. But then I'll write one, you know, because I know, you know, I mean, that's just kind of the relationship that we have. But, you know, I don't. As of right now, I have no expectations of writing another one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you enjoy, because I mean, you did some research into like other cultures, relationships to metal and stuff. Did you enjoy that part of the work about like that research and stuff? Did you enjoy that?
I found it interesting because I think it helped me be a little bit more secure in what it was I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that it wasn't just in my realm of expertise, right? It wasn't just in my tradition that this happens. Is it, you know, metal magic is universal globally, mm-hmm. right? It's not just the Celts, you know, it's everybody had some form of metal work, magical leanings to metal globally. And I think that really kind of helped for me, kind of helped reinforce that there was something to what I was doing. You know, it wasn't just me just spouting off, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that part was interesting for me too, just because there's always things I find interesting that there are similarities, but that they often come from a completely different place in the culture.
Yeah. I mean, because if you look at most of these cultures that I talk about in the book, they have no connection.
Mm-hmm.
There's none. I mean, there's no way that they could know about each other, yet they're not carbon copied, but they're really similar,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's, you know, kind of like the pyramids, right? You got pyramids in Egypt and in South America, you know, Central America, you're like, you know, come on.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I wonder like with metal and with like material culture, like coming at it from an animist viewpoint, is that then just the metal asserting its personality in that culture, you know? I don't know. I'm not making that as a pronouncement because I don't know, but it's a thought.
Well, where I live in North Carolina, we have a very high iron concentration in our dirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And I remember us talking about earlier, you lived in Knoxville and you probably know, you know, there's, you would end up with a ring around your sink or something that where the iron would from the wire. Mm-hmm. But if we just, it's very mountainous where we are. Yeah. It's natural within our living space.
Yeah.
And in fact, where the creek is down on our land, you can see there's like a little rust ring where the mm-hmm. creek runs, and you can just see where the iron rusts, because that's what iron does. And I think having that natural connection to it anyway, and hearing it seem, lack for a better word, I think it does help, because you're not coming at it from a very newbie point of view. And I don't mean that in judgment, just not, mm-hmm. you know, not having any background on it whatsoever coming into it. You know, I could not do what I do when I first started smithing, because I wasn't where I needed to be in order to absorb that, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, and I like how you kind of, tell that story in the book about, like, here's, and interestingly, I felt like it really showed up in the tools section. Like, here's where you need to start. You know, here's some things you kind of have to have if you want to work with metal. And, oh, by the way, be really safe. And here's all the safety things. And let me tell you why you need to be safe about that. And then, you know, as you go along and you perfect your art, then you may want these more advanced tools. Well, and I think that you told that story kind of in that arc of, like, you know, have to have, nice to have, luxury kind of approach to stuff.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes we do ourselves a disservice, because we get into a new craft or a new hobby or a new whatever, and we got to go out and buy all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's nothing wrong with going out and buying stuff. I mean, but we don't have to buy you don't have to buy anything. Most of the stuff that you have that you need, you know, you have it most likely in a toolbox in your current mm-hmm. home. Right. So it's not like you've got to go out and buy a bunch of stuff. And I didn't want people to think that, oh, well, I can't do metal magic because I don't have all the gizmos, you know, and I wanted it to be very much user friendly, you know, and as you got into it, you know, upgrade as you can. I wanted to remove the excuse of I don't have the tools.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think you need to have I don't like excuses. Right. I don't have time. You have time now. Get up. Go work. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. You know, pot kettle, right? But I think that, you know, when we're looking at doing the work with a capital W, that you need to kind of get rid of the excuses and just do the work, right? Yeah. Figure it out, you know, find ways to make it happen. And I didn't want people to come away from the book thinking, oh, man, well, I've got to go have this kind of anvil and I got to go have this particular kind of hammer. And because it prevented me from learning the craft in the beginning because of that, yeah. You know, because you look at, you know, blacksmiths and you look at all the tools and stuff that they've got. I can't afford that. Who can? Well, I mean, you know, but they've also spent decades adding into it.
Right. Right. Building up to that point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, you know, it's like, especially when you look at hobbies that are, you know, vocations or callings or whatever, that there is a lot of equipment and expensive equipment. It's like nobody just drops into that unless they're independently wealthy, and then that's a whole different conversation. You got to build up over time. I mean, my first set of pots and pans were horrible. My first knife was not great, you know, and now I have a really good knife and some really nice pots and pans, but collected over, you know, 30 years.
I mean, but you have to start somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
You can't start there, right? You got to mm-hmm. start somewhere. And currently in my smithy, my blower, my air blower, right, for the forge is actually mm-hmm. hand cranked. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a real fancy $30 Amazon barbecue blower is what it is that I use. And it worked for years. Why do I need to go get something more than that? You know, I would rather spend money on something else than spend money on that. Mm-hmm. My forge that I smith in is literally a box of dirt with a fire brick around it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nothing fancy. You know, it's homemade. Made out of junk, really. I mean, it's leftover wood and literally dirt I dug up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it ain't fancy.
Yeah. I mean, I think I love that idea, though, of like taking on something new with what you have and what you can scrounge, or what did you say, scavenge? I do kind of like that sometimes. I learned, my parents owned a craft shop when I was a kid. So I got to learn like macrame, and it was 70s and 80s, you know, so yeah. I learned all those like home crafts, how to make silk flowers, all this random stuff when I was a kid that I just had kind of given up as an adult and decided to get back into embroidery that I had learned as a kid. And I had some of the contents from my mom's house that she had kept from the craft store. So I had some stuff to start with. And then when I told friends that I was doing, they would go to thrift shops and find like somebody's hoard of embroidery floss, you know, that they were not an abandoned project, you know, something. So I was like, oh, well, I can do this and not spend a dime. Basically, I think the only things I have purchased are carbon paper to transfer designs onto the fabric and some new needles. I think that's it.
You know, I think that, and to me, I get more satisfaction of things showing up,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I look at them as more as a gift,
yeah,
than me going out and purchasing something. My first anvil was literally, it was a basically a steel brick, right? About mm-hmm. the size of a brick.
Oh, I love that story. It was a doorstop, right?
It was a doorstop. That was my first anvil, you know, 10, 12, however many years ago that was. Mm-hmm. That was my first anvil, it was a doorstop. You know, and then I upgraded because I got ready to, okay, I need something different. I started looking and mm-hmm. months or so, something showed up. And, you know, then, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I started looking again and something showed up. And it's, you know, I appreciate it more now than I did then. Or if I mm-hmm. would have gotten what I have now, then, you know, I appreciate them more.
Yeah.
They mean more to me too, you know. Mm-hmm. Plus, they have that energy of being already being used before. They're not brand new. You know, I'm not a big brand new person. I like things to have some character, you know, have a previous life that I can kind of add to.
Yeah.
But that's me.
No, I like that. Well, and I like that you kind of took that approach with the book too. I mean, you did the part you kind of got voluntold to do. And then, you know, you took that to your community to say, hey, this is what I'm working on. What, you know, and then people stepped up. So, yeah, I mean, I think that I like that idea. And I think, and I've probably said this on the podcast that, you know, a lot of people may have this idea that, you know, the author is the person who gets the book in your hand. And that's not really true. Like there's a whole group of people usually responsible for that artifact in your hand.
Yeah, it's a village. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, literally it's a community. Had some amazing people that helped me along the way. It would have never been possible without it. By stretching imagination.
Yeah. You know,
like I said, it wasn't something that I wanted to do. And it's probably a good thing because I would have had a lot of excuses not to finish. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I don't know how to do that. Don't worry about that. I'll handle that. And yeah. Somebody would pop up. Hey, you know, when you're ready, I'm here.
So that's
I had a lot of help along the way.
Yeah.
You know?
So I guess, you know, one of the questions I always like to ask people, and sometimes we don't get to it in some episodes, but like really having done this work on the book and experienced that, like, what do you really want people to walk away from this book with? Like when they read it, like, are you venting blacksmiths or are you what is the goal?
I think for me, I would be absolutely tickled, thrilled to death if people would walk away with it with a newfound respect for their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to know that they have a complete new, most likely new set of allies that they can work with to aid them in their work. And that's, you know, and I think nothing else, if they just reconnect to a part of themselves, you know, because I mean, to me, metals, for me, it has become that. It's a reconnection of me, you know, it's an ongoing part of me. You know, now I get in my car, you know, and it's 2,000 pounds of steel, you know, and copper and a bunch of other stuff. And now mm-hmm. I have something new, you know, versus it's just mundane. I don't even think about it driving back and forth to the grocery store.
Right.
You know, the keys that lock my door, you know, I have a new meaning to those because mm-hmm. they're metal, they're connected to me. And now they, as I lock my door, you know, it sets my wards that are also metal.
Yeah. You know, so
everything becomes connected, but it's not connected from me. It's connected to me, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So I hope people get at least get a different perspective, you know, and, you know, I personally, it has changed my life. But then again, this is my life, mm-hmm. right? But I hope that, you know, people will get something to aid them in their practice so that they can do their work, right, with a capital W, because I think personally, we need more people doing the work. You know, I think we have way too many people talking about doing work and talking about other people not doing work and talking about how other people shouldn't be doing the work they're doing. But I think if we just had more people just doing the work that they need to be doing individually,
yeah,
it would change. We would change the world. Mm-hmm. So I just want people to do the work. You know?
No, I like that. That's
sorry, awesome. Tracy, I'm down. I'll get
no,
off
my I am a polisher of soapboxes on this podcast. So don't feel the need to step down at all. So before we get to our game of chance, which does involve die, cast, and steal, would you like to tell people, like, plug your stuff and tell people where to find you? This will come out at the end of August. So okay. If you've got things coming after that, let folks know what's going on.
I will probably have some. I have my classes usually in the fall and spring. They're located on my website, which is ravenskeepforge.com. Everything is ravenskeepforge. At on Twitter, at on Facebook, at on YouTube. I don't know how many times they're changing it between now and it comes out in August. They seem to change every month mm-hmm. how they do that stuff. But that's at Patreon's the same way. Most of my stuff is commissions. I do have a blog if you want to hear my ramblings that I put out monthly. I do have a shop. So if you want stuff out or get commissioned work, you know, let's talk. It's not as expensive as you probably think it is because it's part of my work. You know, I'm taken care of, so I don't need to make my whole annual wage off of an individual piece. Yeah. Right. So I'm well taken care of in that instance. But yeah, I mean, just, and if you have any questions about it, just, you know, I'm fairly easy to get a hold of. Message me, email me, ravenskeepforge@gmail.com. I mean, it's simple.
Awesome.
Oh, and let's do this. WL. And if you've made it this far into the podcast before we get to the game of games, okay, if I haven't bored you, you made it this far. If you'll go to my website and to the shop. And if you want to get the book, I'll autograph it, right? Personalize it. Let me know what you want. But if you'll put in the code WL for Witchlit 23, which is this year, I'll give you $5 off the
awesome.
Book.
Cool.
So if you made it this far, then there you go.
You get a discount. Awesome. So if you listen to the podcast, you know about the game of chance. And it involves rolling die to get a question about those things that we're not supposed to talk about in polite company. And you grew up in the South, so you know what that means. So depending on what number I roll, you'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money. And if I roll a six, you get to pick which topic you want.
Ah.
So let's see what the fates have in store. One, death. The Morgan speaks. Yeah. So I realized that there are probably things that you can't share. So I asked this with, you know, that in mind.
Okay.
Is, I do not have a relationship with the Morgan. I have an interest and I love the lore of her lore. But I always think of her as a goddess of the fates, right? She's the chooser of the slain in battle. So she has this relationship with death. So I think about like forging and there is some danger in that, but like, how does that aspect of her show up in your work with her, I guess?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. Cause I asked the same thing, to be perfectly honest with you. Cause I thought, you know what, shouldn't I be working with Govnew or Bridget, you know, these, you know, gods of Smithcraft, you know, mm-hmm. why you, right? How does this work? Right. Mm-hmm. Cause inquiring minds want to know, right? Me. And if you look at the etymology of the Morgan, her parentage, right? Etymology of her parentage. Her mother, her Ernest, is death by iron, is what her name means.
Mm-hmm.
And her father, Delveth, is, I believe it's forged in fire or shaped by fire, depending on who does the translation.
Right.
And to me, that speaks blacksmithing, right? You know, and there's a lot of iron deaths that are spoke mm-hmm. mythology. And she is known as kind of a little bit of a psychopomp, right? I mean, that's part of it. But I just think that personally, she is so much more to me. She is so much more mm-hmm. than that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, death can be a lot of things. Death doesn't have to be a physical death, right? It can be a death from changing from one thing to another, mm-hmm. right? From you're no longer an adolescent, now you're an adult. You know, so there was a death there. You know, so death can be, you know, can mean a lot of different things than just a simple physical that we like to hang our hat on, so to speak.
Yeah.
But how she works in with mine is that I do think she very much, she's one of the few, one of three, actually, that I'm aware of, unless somebody knows something more than I, which is quite possible. Only one of three of the sorceress of the Tuatha Dé, her and her two sisters, right? So there's only three of them. So having that magic part wielding with the metal mm-hmm. to me has that great, lack of a better word, I'm real juicy. To me, it's mm-hmm. just juicy.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know if that answers your question. How does she?
No, it does. It does. And I think, you know, I have always thought of her as someone you don't come to lightly. Mm. Like if you want to work with the Morrigan or the Morrigan calls you, there's no half ass about it.
Well, here's my thought. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm back on my soapbox. You shouldn't approach any deity lightly.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gods. There's none of them are fluffy bunny, right? No, there's no squishy gods out there. They can all end you. They're gods. You know, they should all be approached with respect that they're due.
This is a hard polytheist approach to Danny.
But saying all that to say, because I will say that my practice, personal practice, I started out in the 90s and I spent up until about the last, you know, half decade or so, not being attached to a deity. It was almost my little badge of honor. You know, yeah. I can play with whoever I want to play with. I don't have any, you know, there's no strings on me, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, I can kind of do what I want to do, right? Take my toys and go home. But with any deity, I think that you need to approach the relationship with reverence. And here's, I think, is the key that we forget. And I think we have, okay, this is a judgment. We have forgotten to have relationships. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a relationship, whether it's a relationship with your magical practice, it's a relationship with the metal work that I do, it's a relationship with your deity, right? And it works both ways. You cannot treat your deity like a vending machine, okay? You can't just put stuff, you tokens in there and get what you want. It does not work that way, okay? A relationship is a relationship. It should be probably the second most important relationship that you have, other than your significant other, your partner, mm-hmm. whatever. You need to nurture it. You need to take care of it. And you need to just embrace the suck, because it's going to be hard no matter who you work with. Okay? Mm-hmm. Hearing others that are dedicated to other deities, there's no easy path through life, right? It's not how that works. You know, you don't grow unless you're in pain. You know, growth is a struggle. Look at plants. Plants struggled all their whole little lives to try to get to do what it is that they do, to do their great work. And we should be no different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look at that. The edge places, right? That's where you grow, where the edge places.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's it. If you're not challenged, and if you're not, you know, having to exert some extra effort and having to change the way that you think, having to change the way that you do things, you aren't growing. You're existing. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're not, if you're existing, you're not getting any better. You're not really doing anything. You're change is inevitable. Growth is optional. Right?
Yes. Yes. No, I like that. I mean, it seems really simple and kind of like, you know, oh, trite, but no, I think it's true. No,
life's hard. I mean, really, you know, I mean, I grew up Appalachian, right? So, I mean, I have a little different thought process because I grew up before the internet, right? I grew up, you know, where I grew up, we had no power. We had no telephone. We had no, we didn't have all these things that we have now. I just didn't have it. You know, my graduating class was less than 70 people. You know, I mean, we grew up hard, right? It was our lifestyle, but we didn't know no different. That's just how, that's just how it was. And I think I have the blessing of growing up that way to now understand that, you know, if I can survive that, then this is easy.
Yeah.
Right. But it doesn't mean that I still don't do the work. I mean, I still, I'm not there yet. Yeah. There's so much I need to know, so much I need to do, so much growing I'm still doing because I'm constantly going through it. Right. But that's part of the beauty of life. Right. It's not boring.
That's awesome.
I know.
No, I think it's good. I think it's good. I think it's a good place to kind of end on, like, hey, you know, go out there and grow.
Go grow. Go do your work.
Go do your work.
Go do your work. Just do the work.
Yeah. Awesome.
Friend of mine said, that's all I have to do. Just do the work. Just do the work. It ain't hard. Just do it.
Work itself may be hard, but is deciding to do the work is
exactly
the easy part, you know, right?
And just, I mean, like I said, just think of the things that we can accomplish if we all spend time on figuring out how to make it work instead of figuring out what happened.
Yeah.
You know, we're figuring out whose fault it is. Who gives, pardon my French, who gives a shit, right? Now what do we do? You know, let's do the work, correct it, and learn from it, and let's not do it again.
I like it. I like it. Well, awesome. Well, Sam, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing this book. And I hope people will pick it up.
Me too.
And I hope they'll go do the work.
Yeah, go do the work. My new tagline, just do the work.
Awesome. Thank you. Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shinekar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.